In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome to the iSpy Radio Show. So glad you're joining us today. As every week, we try to get a little more intelligence on big government. I don't know if you caught it, but there was one line in Donald Trump's foreign policy speech that really jumped out at me. He said, quote, "We will not apologize for becoming successful, but will instead embrace our unique heritage." And that'd be awesome no matter which Republican gets into the White House, because right now, we are on a path to economic destruction, especially here in Oregon. There's no more guessing. The proof is out there, and it's all thanks to Democrat policies. On today's show, it is the long, slow train wreck that you just can't take your eyes off of. We'll talk with Lisa Lettenmeyer about the impacts of Obamacare and Oregon's own version of Obamacare on insurance and the healthcare system. Someone is making a boatload of money at taxpayer expense, and it may not be who you think it is. And then in the second half of the show, we'll talk with Scott Jorgensen about the train wreck of Oregon's financial state. Programs are spending so much and so fast that they have to borrow to make ends meet. Counties on the verge of collapse and worse. I told you, it's a train wreck. Don't forget we have some free tickets to give away to the movie Climate Hustle in theaters on Monday, May 2nd. Stick around for the end of the show for details on how to get yours. And to talk about the health of insurance companies and healthcare in general, I'd like to welcome back Lisa Lettenmeyer. She is our go-to expert on all things healthcare related. She is an independent insurance broker. Her website is healthsourcenw.com if you're in the market for insurance. Lisa, it is good to talk to you again.
Great to talk with you. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. You know, it is fun to talk to you, but it seems like a lot of times when we talk to you, it's a lot of bad news.
I always classify it like a Debbie Downer moment, right? Like the SNL type thing.
That's right. So here we've got a situation right now with health insurance carriers, and you know, surprisingly enough, Obamacare did not fix all of the problems with the healthcare system. But right here in Oregon, health insurance carriers, seven of them are really struggling right now. The only one that posted a profit last year was Blue Cross Blue Shield. But LifeWise is going to be exiting the Oregon market soon after, I think by the end of the year here. They've been here 22 years. Pacific Source lost $10.2 million. LifeWise lost $35.7 million. HealthNet Plan lost $25.3 million. And Kaiser lost $13.4 million. So there is misery everywhere. Obviously, if companies are not turning a profit, they're going to leave or go out of business. So what's the overall economic health status of our health care insurers here in Oregon?
Well, you know, obviously any business can't go on year after year with record losses. I can tell that all your listeners that our insurance division keeps an eye on all of our insurance carriers for the absolute reason to make sure that they have the financial reserves to pay those claims. So the insurance division sets thresholds for each of our carriers or reserves, so that, you know, if they have a bad year, they can cover that. Now, obviously, we've had carriers have two very bad years, so that's, you know, looking a little leaner. The reason MOTA was in the paper earlier this year in January is the insurance division did step in, and they put them under a financial review because they were concerned about their reserve levels given their claims that were coming in. They since have rectified that and have worked a deal out with the insurance division. And so they are no longer and have not been under financial review since the first part of February, and they're back selling. But as you already alluded to, we lost an insurance carrier in the fall of last year before the open enrollment started, which was Health Republic. That was one of two co-ops that were started here in Oregon. So they left before the selling season, and they are suing the federal government. Their reasoning is that the majority of the reason that they couldn't remain in the market and be solvent is they didn't get that reinsurance money that had been promised by the government. That is also the reason that MOTA suffered so much. So the last numbers I looked at over the course of 2014 and 2015, MOTA's loss was somewhere around $190 million.
Right,
and they
had
been banking on getting that back, and they only got $10 million back from the government. LifeWise is having the same problems. And when they look at Oregon, it is such a small sector of their overall business because they actually run businesses Primera up in Washington and Alaska. So they've made the hard decision to leave Oregon at the end of this year. So they will no longer be here for individual plans, Medicare supplements, and the groups will roll off as they come up to their expiration. So people who have life plans right now, don't panic. It's good till the end of the year, but obviously you're going to need to find something else in that open enrollment. So we have carriers that are struggling. We have in a very busy insurance division that's keeping an eye on all of it to try to make sure that people are solvent. We're waiting. It's actually the end of this week. The insurance carriers are supposed to post their first request for rates for 2017. So that'll be a very telling story to see who comes in with a rate request and what it's going to look like. And that's the first sector of it. Then the insurance division reviews it and comes back to modify. And then the insurance carriers have one more ask before we see the final rates.
Any indications as to which way those directions are going? I mean, are we looking at really big? I mean, because if they're losing that much money, obviously they're going to have to raise money from somewhere. And so it sounds like they're going to have to go back again to their ratepayers, their insurers, or insurees, I guess, and ask for more money. Is that what you're expecting?
Yeah, the rumors I'm hearing, so nothing official, but just talking to people, the rumors I've heard is that we should all be expecting double-digit increases again.
Oy.
And remember, last year, all of our carriers posted double-digit increases except for one, and the insurance division came back and either allowed those rate increases as is or in four or five cases requested that carriers go up even higher.
Right.
And Kaiser was one of them, and they had tried to have no rate increase, and they got saddled with, I think, a 9 or 10% rate increase. So it's affecting everybody. I fully expect to see rate increases this year. I have no idea right now how bad, but I'm preparing for the worst. And this is just what we're in for. I figured that when we got into year, you know, two, three, four, there was going to be some upheaval in the market. You cannot take on this amount of risk and not assume that it's going to affect things. And again, that promise from the government for that reinsurance pool failed. So that's where a lot of the financial strife is coming from. There is no ability for that carrier to have planned for how much they took on in claims. In fact, you know, people had speculated that the business out there was going to be sicker for the first couple of years, but they didn't expect it to be this sick. And so the claims have been even higher than anybody had anticipated.
Wow. Oy, okay. All right. Well, we are up against the clock here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more on the state of the insurers here in Oregon. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about the health of the state, at least in terms of the health of the insurers here and of healthcare in general. And to do that, we're talking with Lisa Lettmeyer. She's the owner of Health Source Northwest. It's an independent insurance broker. And her website, if you'd like to go visit that, is healthsourcenw.com. And Lisa, going into the break there, we're talking about these insurers that are fleeing the state now. We've lost two within the last calendar year. And so here is I think this is what we were afraid of when we first started talking about this all those years ago, is that we're going to be winnowing down the number of insurers. And of course, the suspicion at the time was that Obamacare was going to have this effect, that it's going to push everybody eventually into a single payer system. Does that look like where we're still eventually headed?
Yeah. And, you know, Oregon's a bit fortunate because we had such a competitive and large in insurance industry to begin with. You're looking at states like Idaho and others around the country that have one or two or three carriers now, and the announcements in the last couple of weeks from United Healthcare, which is the largest insurer in the country, they're going to pull out. So far, they've claimed that they're going to be pulling out of 26 of the 34 exchanges that they sell in around the country. And in some states, that's literally leaving some people within that state with one choice or maybe two if they're lucky. This is not at all what you want to see in trying to continue to create competition, which then helps drive prices down. When you're left with one carrier or maybe two, you're really, there is no place for anybody to go. That carrier takes all the risk, and obviously it affects the rate.
Right. So. And from a company's standpoint, you know, why worry about efficiency? I mean, you're the only player on the block at that point. So
we're not there in Oregon yet, but it, you know, regardless, losing a company like LifeWise, who's been here over 20 years, that should rattle some people. when we lost Assurant Health last year, big national carrier, we didn't talk about them. They'd been selling insurance for, 40, 50 years or more, and they pulled out of the individual insurance market across the nation, and they were selling in over 40 states. When you see those things happening, that is not a good sign. And there's nothing that is, you know, there's no rocket science going on here. A carrier's job is to collect premium from the masses to pay the claims of hopefully the few, right? Because,
right.
you know, not everybody's having a major medical claim, thank goodness. But when that shifts and the amount of claims going out overtakes that premium, there is nowhere else for the premium to go but up.
Right.
And the cost of healthcare is what should have been addressed. And it didn't get addressed as well as it should have in the Affordable Care Act. And so here we are.
Right. And speaking of costs of health care, there was a really interesting article put out by Willamette Week. And I'm just going to read a quote here. The state's largest hospital system, Providence Health and Services, has stockpiled nearly $6 billion in cash reserves, which is almost twice the cash reserves that NICA has. The story goes on to say what Representative Greenlick, a former researcher at Providence, sees today are Oregon's hospitals banking windfall profits, even though they are nonprofits and providing dramatically less charity care to the poor. So these hospitals here are just making all sorts of profits. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Apparently, the majority of the hospitals across the nation enjoy a nonprofit status. So therefore, they don't pay property tax and they don't pay income tax like here
right.
in Oregon.
Right.
So in the past, that was okay because the trade-off was for all those people who did not have health insurance coverage, if they ended up in the emergency room or had some major medical care that needed to be taken care of, guess what? That hospital stepped in, they took care of that person, and most of the time they had to write that off as bad debt. So that was their charitable contribution, right, for being nonprofit status. Well, since the Affordable Care Act, in states like Oregon and Washington and California and however many others across the nation, I think we're up to 30-something, that expanded Medicaid. So all these people that did not have insurance before, most of them achieved insurance through Medicaid. Yes, we've added some people with the Affordable Care Act through the individual market and the exchanges, but not nearly the same amount that we've added through Medicaid. So those people are not paying for that coverage because obviously it's Medicaid. They don't have the money to. And the services are now being paid for by state and federal dollars. So that's a windfall for the hospitals because mm-hmm. before they got nothing. Now they're at least getting the Medicaid reimbursement rate. So this has dramatically shifted how much bad debt or write-off that they're actually experiencing because the majority of the people that they're seeing now have some form of insurance. So
well,
there's a lot of questions going on. Are they really still a nonprofit then?
Right, exactly. And I mean, it's certainly not unusual. We have certainly seen a lot of nonprofits that are just flush with cash. We certainly see that in the environmental movement. But this is really kind of the new shift. This is something that we had discussed with, I don't recall if it was with you or another guest, but this was what we were looking at, is that you're going to have all of this money being shifted now into healthcare. And if the far left, you know, just to veer into politics here briefly, if the far left was making boku bucks with the environmental movement, I mean, the healthcare system is like 1,000 times what the environmental movement gets. And so you could see where a lot of money here could suddenly start finding its way into Democrat coffers and so on and so forth. But the reality is like you say, this is $6 billion in cash profits. And what bothers me is that this is not, you know, the hospitals have found a new way to improve services, or they've got a new widget that they've invented that everybody wants. Instead, this is coming from taxpayers. And that's what I think is so dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, I have read reports where they're using these windfalls to replace older equipment or to buy that new widget, right, that can do that new cool thing. But regardless, they are certainly sitting on more profits than they have in the past. It is something I believe, at least from the articles that I've read, that's going to get picked up by the legislature. So we'll see what happens here in Oregon. This isn't just an Oregon problem. Other states are discussing this and deciding, should these really still remain nonprofit or should we be shifting this around? I think the bigger thing to be looking at is when you're looking at the whole nation and you cut it up into a pie, how many people now are on Medicaid, which is a fully funded government program between Fed mm-hmm. and state dollars? How many people are on Medicare? And then from there, how many people are on employer or union plans or individual? So we don't I don't think as a nation we want to see the majority of people on government-sponsored plans. We've got to work to get people off of these and increase the economy so people can be working and getting jobs and making it easier for businesses to provide those benefits that we've always seen in the past. Yes, you can say, look at us, we've thrown 1 in 4 people in Oregon onto Medicaid, and what a win. But I always challenge them back, because I talk to Medicaid people all the time that don't feel that it's really a win, because they're still struggling to get access to the right care, or they're having to play a bureaucratic system now. So
right.
It's a double-edged sword. You
right.
accomplish coverage, but at what kind of coverage, and how easy is it to access, and is it really the right coverage?
And none of the costs are going down either, unfortunately. So
no,
all right, we're up against the clock here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Lisa Lettmeyer after this. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking to Lisa Lettmeyer. She is the owner of Health Source Northwest. She is an independent insurance broker and our go-to expert for insurance and all things healthcare. And Lisa, we were talking during the break there about the fact that this is a double-edged sword. We have now moved away from a system that was free market-based, essentially. I mean, you know, that was still kind of, you know, with the infusion of the government in there through Medicare and Medicaid and all that. There are elements of socialism there, but you know, I'm looking at all this money and that these hospitals are now profiting on. And so you've essentially got taxpayer dollars going to these hospitals who then are turning around and putting that money into lobbyists. And the other thing that was really worrisome back in the day there is that one of the major failings of Oregon's healthcare transformation laws is that it did away with antitrust and monopoly laws, a fact that we pointed out a long, long time ago. And sure enough, this Willamette Weekly article reveals that this is in fact happening. And again, just a quote from that, quote, Oregon's hospitals have been buying doctors' groups and other healthcare assets. And since Obamacare went into effect, OHSU paid $50 million to buy a chunk of Moda Health and Ensure. And Legacy not only bought Silverton Hospital, but it also bought 50% of the health insurer Pacific Source. And so we have this monopoly coming our way. And getting back to that idea of this being a double-edged sword is that, you know, if you move them away from a nonprofit status, well, they're just going to raise their rates. And we used to have a system, a free market system, where, okay, if you raise your rates, then we're going to go to the hospital down the road or a clinic or find any other number of ways to not have to pay those prices. But we don't have that anymore, do we?
No, because I tell people all the time that the one of the biggest challenges in trying to find a health insurance plan in the individual or group market, or even in the Medicare world, is making sure that the plan that you're selecting is still going to allow you access to those doctors and hospitals that you prefer to see. And with this whole Affordable Care Act and all these people that are coming on board with these claims and everything's escalating, the carriers are trying desperately to find ways to mitigate their costs. And one of the number one ways they can do that is through network negotiations. So they might get much, much better pricing if they focus in on one hospital system. So maybe it's Providence, or maybe it's Legacy, or maybe it's OHSU. But regardless, as they can negotiate and what I call narrow those networks down, the idea behind that is to manage the cost better and get to better price points, which makes total sense for the insurance carrier and the consumer. But because we've got the system going on, like you just said, you might go to one hospital and they say, hey, it's a really high price. And you could go down the road to the other guy who's cheaper, but is that guy going to be in your network? And that's going to be a huge concern on any of those product lines.
Yeah, it just continues to boggle the mind how, you know, everybody sees that a free market system is a better, more efficient way to drive down costs, to drive down prices, to benefit consumers. And yet we have put in so many roadblocks to that system, as you so rightly pointed out just now, is that, you know, yeah, the prices down the road may be cheaper, but they're not in your system. So what good does it do? I mean, it's just one roadblock after another when it comes to what we ought to be doing. In terms of Obamacare, I want to make sure that we touch on this because all of the reports are saying that Obamacare is set for a massive rate increase in 2017. What can you tell us about that?
Well, like I said, right now, you know, here in Oregon, where it's all speculation, if you're one of us, like on the outside, right, one of us consumers and the agent, because we haven't seen the carrier's rates. Technically, they're due to the insurance division on April 30th, but it takes the insurance division a couple days to kind of go through that. And then they will, usually within a week or two, they'll post kind of a average price increase for each of those carriers. So they'll just pick one product line and one or two or three age brackets and say, here is the average price increase. Now that's specific to that particular plan and age bracket. So until we get to the point of really, you know, August or September, where we're actually going to start to see the actual rates, we'll figure it out then. But it'll be telling to see, first of all, who is going to post rates, right? So we know LifeWise isn't going to be there anymore. And then what are those rate increases going to be? And again, as I mentioned earlier, the rumors I'm hearing is to expect double-digit increases.
So because we've already moved so many people over onto Medicaid here in Oregon, are we going to be seeing maybe lower rate increases versus other parts of the country that have not done that?
No, because again, the people that are buying insurance, because of the way the plans are designed, because there is no ability for any kind of risk assessment, that person can purchase a plan and immediately receive services for things that have been ongoing, maybe for years. Mm. And that, again, it sounds great to the consumer. And in some cases, that's a huge benefit. That could take somebody's life in a whole different direction. But people need to realize there is a cost behind that. So any insurance that you ever go out to buy, I don't care if it's homeowners or auto or life or disability, whatever it is, you've always been assessed on your risk, right? Because that makes sense. The carrier has to figure out or assume how much risk are you going to cost them so that they can appropriately charge you premium. None of that is allowed. It's not allowed, and it hasn't been allowed in the group market for years here in Oregon, but it certainly isn't allowed anymore in the individual market nationwide, and that's just shifting things. The carriers have very little ability to plan for or protect against that. They've been told what the plans have to look like in generalities, preventative care covered at 100%. There's all these things that are coming into these plans that are not a particular choice of the insurance carrier. It's a requirement,
right?
And then they have to take everybody, and so they literally are just paying the bills and doing the best they can while trying to negotiate on our behalf with these doctors and hospitals, which is becoming harder and harder to do.
It's just so unfortunate because it's the taxpayers really that are getting this from all sides. They have to pay more taxes to pay for Obamacare, which is giving these hospitals all these profits. So they are paying for higher prices for medical services and insurance, and then on top of that, they're paying more in taxes to make up for what these hospitals aren't paying. I mean, it is unfortunately just a terrible situation. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me back.
And thanks for sticking with us on the iSpy Radio Show. We just wrapped things up with Lisa Lettmeyer. And if you thought the state of healthcare and health insurers was bad in Oregon, better buckle up. We're going to shift gears now and talk about Oregon State's own growing pile of debt. I'd like to welcome Scott Jorgensen to the show. He is a former news reporter and talk show host in Grants Pass before moving into the world of politics. He worked in the House of Representatives and is currently the chief of staff for Oregon Senator Doug Whitsitt. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, happy to be on.
Yeah, you know, preparing for the show, you sent us a list of topics, and I guess the common denominator there was funding problems, state debt, declining federal funds for Oregon Health Authority and DHS, funding problems for ODOT and Fish and Wildlife, PERS, and that half of Oregon's counties are still in funding crisis, and we're going to try to touch on as many of those as possible, but just in terms of an overall perspective, are these funding problems that we're seeing, are they due to a decline in revenue, meaning taxes, or is it spending, or meaning too much spending, or is it both?
Well, one could easily argue that it's the result of policy decisions that have been made in this building throughout the last several years. And some of them should come as no surprise, because I think that at the time a lot of this was done, lawmakers and others knew that the costs, you know, that the bill would come due at a future date, and that date's getting closer and closer.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the topic of debt, and I think a lot of people have the perception that, you know, we have to have a balanced budget here as a state. Unlike the federal government, we can't print our own money, and that somehow this means we don't use debt financing, but our combined long-term general obligation debt is $10.56 billion from the information that you had sent us. So the debt that we've accumulated here, is this a necessary part of state government, meaning that it's a matter of cash flow? Or is this a philosophical issue that it's just one more way to spend more than we have?
Well, some of it, once again, is the result of deliberate policy decisions that were made. So we can talk about the Department of Transportation as a great example of that. Part of why there was discussion during the 2015 regular session about the need for a transportation package is the fact that ODOT's budget over the long term is unsustainable and widely recognized as such. Mm. And ODOT's budget was traditionally pay-as-you-go. But then last decade, we started the Oregon Transportation Investment Act grant programs, otherwise known as ATIA, and that resulted in a lot of projects being done statewide. However, it was all done through bonding, and with that, you get an amount of debt service needed to pay that off, and over time, that grows and grows and grows, and it's becoming a larger and larger part of the budget, and every dollar that you spend paying down debt from previous projects is a dollar that you can't spend on projects moving forward.
When you mentioned that this was 10 years ago, did that happen under a Republican House or Senate, or was that at the time when we had total Democrat control?
Well, the closest we've gotten in a long time in this state was the 2011 session where the House was split. But
right.
For the most part, Democrats have been running the show in this state for a very long time.
Yeah, they have. But unfortunately, there have been, I mean, it seems like back in the early 2000s, we had I think the Senate was in control of the Republicans, but I could be remembering that wrong. But, you know, sometimes these Republicans get into office and they can be as bad of spenders as the Democrats can be. Certainly saw that under the Bush administration. But anyway, getting back to the notion of debt, does this debt bother the Democrats or Republicans for that matter? And is there any discussion on either side of paying down the debt?
Well, beyond a certain point, you have to if it affects your ongoing operations. And I think that the Democrats are less worried about it because they said, well, see, this is why we're pushing for more tax increases. But that's been the strategy here for a long time. And that's kind of how things have been working around here, where you have all these different agencies and these different functions. And year after year, I mean, you keep reading about it in the paper, that a lot of these agencies aren't functioning as they were intended. But their answer to that typically is, well, gee, that's because we're not giving them enough money. So we have those fights here in the building, and you know, they end up getting more money. And you come back a couple of years later, and it's essentially the same situation. Well, they're still not functioning as intended, right, because we didn't give them enough money. So let's give them more money and cross our fingers. And so this is just the pattern that keeps repeating itself over and over again.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it just seems like there is. And even when you give them the money that they're asking for, it still never seems to be enough.
Well, and you can look at education, for example, and the amount of education spending. You know, the teachers union, the Oregon Education Association, is and has been one of the most powerful political entities in Oregon for as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. This Capitol building is openly referred to by insiders as the house that OEA built. So if education in Oregon isn't meeting needs, which every objective indicator says it isn't, it wouldn't be due to the teachers union not getting everything that they've wanted in every session, with the possible exception of, you know, removing property tax limitations that were put in the Constitution by Oregon voters. But it's a matter of how, and we look at the way that different school districts spend their money, and I think there's, you know, starting to be more scrutiny along those lines. One of the issues that came up this last session was that districts get more weighting funding-wise for students who have English as a second language, except that funding isn't directly tied to programs or anything that they do. So they can use that money for everything else. But what that does is that creates a financial incentive for districts to keep children in these programs, even sometimes well beyond the point where they even need to be.
Mm.
And so that, I think that's another example of something that may have been well-intended at one point, but that is still causing consequences, that is eroding the quality of education for children throughout Oregon.
Wow. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Before we do, I'd just like to mention that according to the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission, right now, every single person, that's not every taxpayer, but every man, woman, and child, owes around $1,940 just to cover the debt. Coming up, we're going to be talking about problems with green energy and the case of the disappearing federal funds for healthcare. And welcome back. It's all about cash today here on the iSpy Radio Show, giving you a little more intelligence on big government, or big spending in this case. Health insurance companies are struggling, and so are state agencies here in Oregon. And we're talking with Scott Jorgensen. He is a former news reporter and talk show host in Grants Pass. He is currently the chief of staff of, the chief of staff for Oregon Senator Doug Whitsitt. So let's shift to energy spending here. Senator Whitsitt called the Betsy, that's the Business Energy Tax Credit, he called the Betsy program a debacle and even called for an investigation into the Departments of Revenue and Energy. So what's going on with Betsy?
Well, right now the senator is a member of the Department of Energy Oversight Committee, and that committee had its last meeting on Monday, April 25th. And so far, it's consisted of overviews of the agency's different functions and what it does, and it also included input from stakeholders, the different utility entities and everyone else that works closely with the department to see if there are things that it could be doing better, to see if there are functions it does that are duplicative of those done by other agencies. And, you know, maybe hopefully at some point we'll get into the nitty-gritty of what exactly happened with the rampant abuse of the Business Energy Tax Credit Program, the cronyism, you know, the alleged cronyism and corruption that resulted from it. It'd be great to know where the money went, and hopefully we can get down to the bottom of that at some point.
Do you have much faith that will happen, getting down to the bottom of that? And how much of it disappeared?
Well, I'll give you an example. We got a spreadsheet of all the business energy tax credits that had been issued. And what I did was I pulled out from them the credits that were issued to government entities. And some of your listeners are probably wondering, wait a minute, why are we giving tax credits to government agencies? Because as you, me, and your listeners all know, government agencies don't pay taxes.
Yeah.
Right? So the total I got was just over 2,400 of them. The spreadsheet tells me they averaged around $200,000 for a total of $491 million in business energy tax credits. Those were just the ones that were issued to government entities.
Okay, that... Wow. Okay, so why exactly are government entities getting tax credits?
Well, it was to support different projects, and I knew some of the projects. One of them, for example, I remember reporting on down in Grants Pass years back, and it was to put solar panels on the roof of some of the fairgrounds facilities over there in Grants Pass. Mm. And so the purpose was to incentivize those kinds of programs, but obviously we've had any number of newspaper headlines over the last few years detailing the ways in which those credits were improperly issued, that the fact that there was no oversight, there was no follow-up on whether the projects were even done. And, you know, the deeper we look into it, we discovered that some of these decisions were made by frontline staff, not administrators, not anybody at the higher-up levels, but you had potentially very expensive decisions being made by frontline staff with no accountability and no oversight.
Mm. In terms of your spreadsheet there, what does it show to go into like these various green groups or environmental groups and stuff? Do you have any totals on that offhand?
I didn't look into that. My main interest at that point was just seeing how many of them went to other government agencies, and those figures just in and of themselves were staggering.
Oh, yeah, totally staggering. The other thing that that report that I mentioned before about the state debt, it highlights the fact that the small-scale energy loan program is also in trouble, and as I recall, they've got around $73 million in bad debt. Do you know anything about that program?
That's come up in the Department of Energy Oversight Committee meetings, and what's become obvious is that Oregon taxpayers are going to be on the hook for this for many years to come.
Mm. Yeah. Through 2034, if I remember right. So
yeah, the idea originally was that some of these loans were going to be paid back over time, but that hasn't really happened, and you know, it seems like you read just about every day about another solar company going bankrupt.
Right.
And it's really difficult to collect debt that's due from entities that no longer exist.
Exactly. And unfortunately, a lot of those big debts in that supposedly small-scale energy loan program, they were to the large, some of these larger corporations, like you say, that just ended up going up belly up. We only got a couple of minutes here in this segment, so let's talk about Oregon Health Authority and also DHS, some of the declining federal funds there. In the first half of our show, we discussed how the increases in Medicaid has put a lot of individuals into the healthcare system, and that hospitals that are reaping some major rewards out of that. Providence alone has racked up $6 billion in cash reserves, but the healthcare system was set up with the idea that there will be all this federal funding coming in behind it. So how much of that federal money has stopped coming into Oregon?
Well, you could even take it further back and say these issues arguably began back in 2009. And that was when the legislature, which at that point was controlled supermajorities in the House and Senate by Democrats,
right,
when they decided to create the health authority in the first place and spin it off from the Department of Human Services. And a lot of legislators, including Senator Whitsitt, my former boss, former Representative Dennis Richardson, and even myself, I wasn't in the building back in 2009. I was reporting down in Cave Junction and doing the talk shows in Grants Pass. But we all seemed to think, and a lot of other people did too, that this would end up being a colossal mistake, because as it is, DHS's budget has ballooned over time. And when that happens, it starts competing with education, public safety, and other mandated functions. So since 2007, Health and Human Services spending has increased 250% and is now over 42% of the state's entire budget.
Wow.
And so you talk about sustainability or the lack thereof. So far, yes, you're right. And you look at disgraced former Governor John Kitzhaber, one of his goals was to make Oregon the poster child of healthcare reform.
Yes.
So we were the first lemmings off the cliff as far as that went. And, the Obama administration was more than happy to help us get there and kept giving us federal funds. A key component of that is expansion of Medicaid eligibility, which is
right,
done through Oregon Health Plan. And they were successful in that sense. So they met the goal of, lowering the percentage and the numbers of Oregonians that didn't have health insurance, which that's one of the things they set out to do. So now we have over 1.2 million Oregonians on Medicaid. So at the end of this year, around $380 million of that federal support will phase out. And it will begin to incrementally reduce at the start of the 2017-19 biennium.
And at that point, does that mean, with that phase out, does that mean that Oregon then will be on the hook for that?
That's exactly what that means.
Yeah.
And what it means is that it will nearly double our share of those costs by the year 2020. And because of that, human services budgets in this state in the 2017-19 biennium will cost at least $1 billion more because of that and other factors.
Wow. Absolutely ugly. All right. More bad news is coming up after this. We're in our final segment today on iSpy. We're talking with Scott Jorgensen. He is the chief of staff for Oregon Senator Doug Whitsitt, and we've been talking about the enormous financial problems facing the state. And if you're only just now joining us, you can download the full show from iSpyRadio.com after our broadcasting stations get first shot at airing it. It will be in the archives by noon on Monday. And so, Scott, we only got a few minutes here with you in this segment. Talk to us real quick about PERS and the impact of that state Supreme Court ruling.
Well, so as you know, back in 2013, we had a special session following the regular session, and that was in the fall of that year, because then Governor Kitzhaber, I think, really wanted some fodder for reelection and wanted to make it look like he was serious about PERS reform. So there were some measures passed in that short session that would have reduced the cost of PERS to taxpayers by more than $1 billion per budget cycle. But just around a year ago, the Oregon Supreme Court threw most of those reforms out,
right.
90% of those cost savings, as being unconstitutional because there were retroactive changes and bargain for cost of living adjustments. And there's provisions of the state constitution that prohibit legislative changes to existing contracts. And the cost of living portion made up 90% of the purse savings that would have resulted from that legislation.
Right, right. So what's the debt that we're facing right now due to PERS?
Well, the immediate figure is $1 billion. And so the real hit is going to be at the local level. So out of that $1 billion, $360 million will be charged to school districts, $420 million to local governments, and the rest will be paid by state employers. So it's not insignificant, especially when you consider the condition financially of many of our counties.
Right. Well, that kind of brings us into our next question. You mentioned that a lot of counties are facing a lot of fiscal issues right now. So are we back to the point where a lot of counties are facing bankruptcy or what?
They've been kind of teetering on the verge of bankruptcy for a while now, and that was something I covered for years when I was down in Grants Pass, when I was writing for the Illinois Valley News and when I was news director over at Grants Pass Broadcasting. You know, I attended county commissioner meetings fairly regularly for about 4 years, you know, from late 2006 until, you know, the end of 2010. And in a way, I feel like I've been watching the same people and different people have the same discussion for many years. And, you know, up until now, it's always been every time we reach this crisis point, oh, look, we managed to attach federal payments to this piece of legislation. So we got another 2-year extension, which does nothing for the private sector, which is what a lot of local officials were reluctant when this all first came up, well, back in 2000 or thereabouts when the Secure Rural Schools program first started. I said, well, that's fine that you're going to be paying us to not cut timber, but they knew the day would come when those federal funds would dry up and you still wouldn't be cutting any timber. And, you know, the idea was that it would be temporary to allow the counties to diversify their economic bases, and doesn't change the fact that the federal government owns a lot of the land in many of these counties, that they're not doing anything with it, they're not letting anybody else do anything with it. And then you have on top of that the state's land use laws, which prohibit anybody from doing commerce or industry or building a house on the vast majority of the land in this state. So that has kept a lot of these counties from developing any kind of a tax base. Now, obviously, there's property tax limitations in place. And, for example, Josephine County's tax base, you know, their rate of property taxes is significantly lower than it is for many of the counties in the Portland metro area. But you also have to consider the demographics, because for property taxes, which is typically used to fund local services, the thing is that a lot of the people are seniors on fixed incomes. So you'd be putting folks in the position of paying, you know, more property taxes with Social Security income, which is really difficult if cost of living adjustments haven't been there for folks on Social Security. I mean,
they're limited. And what is so sad about all of this is a lot of those southern counties, when they were harvesting timber, they had some of the best schools and roads in the entire state. And unfortunately, they have so totally thrown that out the window. Scott, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, well, happy to be on and really appreciate the conversation and the opportunity to get the message out to people about what's really going on in the state and the extent to which we are in big, big trouble, folks.
Yeah, it is absolutely astounding where we're at. Well, that's it for today's show. But on a happier note, if you've managed to stick around, we have some free tickets to the movie Climate Hustle in theaters this Monday, May 2nd. This is a one-night national release, although the tickets that were given away are just for our Oregon listeners. Here's what you do. Head to climatehustlemovie.com and click on the Buy Tickets button. This will show you a list of theaters so that you can make sure that there's one that you can get to. Then just drop us an email at info@ispyradio.com, or you can call us and leave a message at 503-465-ISPY. That's 503-465-4779. And be sure to leave us your name and contact information, phone, email, carrier, pigeon route. And winners will be drawn at random and notified first thing Monday morning. Once again, emails to info@ispyradio.com or call 503-465-4779. And if you missed any of that, head to ispyradio.com and look for today's show page. We hope that you're at least a little wiser than when you got here. But as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.